Hello, we are Terra Nova, a horror podcast hosted by Kendall and Jackie, and here we talk about everything horror. And this podcast is specifically for you, the horror fans, and the non-horror fans. If you're too scared to watch the movies, it's fine. We talk about it, we discuss it, we dissect it, we laugh about it, talk about the good, the bad, and the tropes. And we have new episodes released Tuesdays bi-weekly.
And follow us on Facebook and Instagram at TerraNova_podcast. But also feel free to reach out through email at terranova.pod@gmail.com. And most importantly, tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend.
And tell your dog too. Cujo.
Hello.
Hello.
You okay over there, Jackie?
Yeah, I am. Why? I'm going to ask that.
I was just asking because I know every time you'd be like, you say hello differently.
Because you
like,
do.
I'm trying. I just don't know what else to do with my voice.
Every time, doesn't matter what we're doing, your hello changes from like hello to like old man Kendall hello. Like you need your vitamins or something.
Yeah, I ain't take those yet today, but I'm good. I'm good.
I took mine today. I remember.
You know, I should get Keith David on here just to say hello.
But yeah.
So what's up?
This is another of our Terra Talks. And for those who've been listening for a while already, thank you. And you know how we do. We put on people who we met, cool people, and we interview them. And I'm excited for this one because this is a Instagrammer who we've been following for a while. And she be posting all these cool recommendations of books, which I need to start adding more to my library, my own personal library, because I'm still going through the Junji Ito Same. Books that I have. I haven't finished all of them. But yeah, and she goes by Wandering Reader, and her name is Nina James. Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. Y'all have no idea.
How excited? I need to know. How excited?
To the moon excited.
That is awesome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We really appreciate you being here. Jackie threatened my life if we didn't get you on here, so I was like, we gotta do this urgently. People be think I'm joking. Jackie is aggressive for somebody so tiny. So welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
If you want to hop right into it, tell us a little bit about yourself, like just in general, generally speaking.
So most people know me as Nina, Nina James. I live in Lawrence, Kansas, and I am a librarian at Lawrence Public Library. And I'm also a bookseller at the Raven Bookstore, which very recently won Best Bookstore in America. Just a little brag.
Wow. Oh, wow.
There. Yeah. Yeah. So we're really proud of it. But when I'm not, you know, actually working at a bookstore at the library, I come home and I love talking to people on Instagram or Bookstagram about books, specifically scary books, because I love horror. And I don't know. For me, it's a bias, but horror to me is the best genre to read because you're almost never bored. I love books that get my heart racing, just like people love movies that get their heart racing. You know, it's kind of the same. And so I spend a lot of my free time telling people, you know, what great books out there they can read. That'll get their heart racing, especially if you're a horror movie fan, because a lot of the horror movies that started out as books.
Mm-hmm.
So
good point.
I feel like it's Stephen King has a lot of books out there that are, we've got Jaws, we've got Carrie, we've got The Exorcist, all of those started out as books. And so sometimes I'm just like, I want to give books their flowers. Their credit. So yeah,
that's cool.
So you're basically saying you took that reading is fundamental statement very seriously at a young age. That's what it sounds like.
Yes. I'm very, very serious about it.
Was it just like you just started out reading just everything, and then somewhere along the way a horror book just made you go, you know what, this is it, I'm gonna just stick to this? Like, what kind of got you started in the reading?
Yeah, pretty much of it. I'm one of those people who learned to talk and read before she learned to walk, and so yeah, when I was little, my mom would give me books to look at so that I would stop, like, I guess, crawling around. She says she would give me books so that she could keep an eye on me, because if I had a book, I wouldn't move. And so, no one in my immediate family really enjoys reading, but we'd always have books around as, like, decorative statements in, like, the living room. And so, before horror, I would just pull random books off the shelf. And they were usually classics. I do love books like, you know, authors like Jane Austen. I do love Tolstoy. Anna Karenina is one of my favorite books of all time, which shocks a lot of people because it's very, very long, and it's, you know, it can be dry in some places, but it's a tragic romance, and I love tragic romances with, like, messy messy drama and scandal. Toxic relationships, rich people problems. I love it. And that, there's a lot of that is in classic literature. And so from there, I started transitioning from classic literature to classic horror. I don't want to say, I mean, I guess, like, The Portrait of Dorian Gray would probably be the, I don't know if I would call that 100% horror, though, but it's a very slow transition.
I mean, I was
classics to classic horror.
I would say it is horror, because, I mean, the book, even though it's a short story, it's still so good, and then when it's adapted into film, it's just so beautiful and sad. Like, that's a really big, tragic story, and also kind of scary, too. Like, imagine your portrait is being painted, and you're just like, ha-ha, your soul's been taken by the devil, you can't age, ha-ha. It's like, wait, what? Yes. What?
Shit. Vanity is a very scary
it is.
Too. I don't know why paintings and horror is always scary. It's like that little girl in The Witches.
But yeah, so I've been into reading for a long time. It's my favorite pastime. It's always been my favorite pastime. I don't know if, like, younger me would have ever known that she would grow up and literally make books her life. I think younger me thought she was going to be a scientist, but it's fine.
He said it was going to be a what?
A scientist. I had so many hobbies as a kid that I thought I was going to do anything other than read books, talk about books, read books. Like, I don't know. it's weird. But that's I'm not unhappy. You made it work. So. Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, it's funny you said about your mom kind of getting you to read to kind of stand still. I think my parents kind of had, like, a similar thing when I was a kid. Honestly, I think all the way up until I was, like, at least in high school. Every day, my parents would make me read something. Like, my father's just whole motto, my father in particular, his whole motto was, like, you need to read something every day. Ooh. Just so, like, and I don't know why he felt that way about it, but he just really was like, of course, my household was serious about education. But he was just like, you need to read something every day. And so it was like, even when I was at the school, when I would come home, if I didn't have, like, reading homework, he'd make me read, like, an article in the newspaper or something, which, of course, it's a news, so it's not always good news. But he would make me read an article out of the newspaper. He'd be like, read this article. And then he'd make me explain back to him what I just read. And he'd be like, so give me a quick summary of it. Like, you know, first school was just kind of used to have you doing, like, current events. But, like, he was like, that aside, like, I need you to read an article and then tell the story back to me. Like, I want to know that you, like, understood it. And we used to do that, like, every day.
That's so funny that your dad did that, because at one point my dad did that too. My mom would take us to the library a lot. And my dad was like, you're bringing home so many books. I don't believe you're reading all of them. So he would have us write, I have three other siblings. He would have us write, like, a one-page summary, like, book report on all the books we read, and I was like, all right, bet, let's go. So, and then he would get so many of those book reports that he's like, all right, I believe you're reading all these books. I don't want to read these anymore.
So. That's really cute. I don't know, Jackie, did you have any of those issues with reading too much, or he was reading a lot as a kid? Or
not really. I mean, because I used to go to the library, like, either my mom would take me or I would go by myself. And I would just get, like, mostly, I mean, I was always geared towards, like, horror, always, my whole life. Yeah. Like, I will always read the Goosebumps books. Like, I think I used to, like, try to, like, keep them. But, you know, there's a library. It's just like, you owe a fine. It's just like, I don't want to deal with that. So here, take it back. But yeah, like, even, like, books that were, like, for young readers, I used to read them at my age when I was young, and I was like, I shouldn't be reading this, but I like it. But yeah, my mom never really...
Animorphs and all that?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, Animorphs, that's right.
Oh my god. I remember I told Kendall how much I wanted to be an Animorph when I first came out. I was like, man, I want to turn to a bird or some type of animal, be cool and stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, just don't turn into a roach or nothing like that, man. It's too tiny.
Some of those, though, they turn into weird animals, and I'd be like, oh, why? Why?
Yeah.
Why
that? Super, super strange.
Tiger or something.
Yeah, I would definitely rather be something like that. I miss that show. That show was really great. It was a lot of fun. The books were awesome, too. I actually read the books, I think, more than I watched the show.
Oh, wow. Because they were just like,
I don't think I read all of them, but I definitely read quite a few of them. Because, similar to what you all said, like, my parents used to take me to the library quite often. Like, especially, you know, you're trying to do school projects at that time before you had a computer in your house. It was like, gotta go to the library. Mm-hmm. So, it was like a second home. You're in there writing, typing homework up. You're reading books on the shelves. You're grabbing books all over. Sometimes my parents would just go there randomly on the weekend and be like, we're going to be here for 2 hours, so fix something, find something to read. And then I'm like,
something good.
Trying to read Goosebumps and all this stuff.
That's actually interesting because, so I was homeschooled for elementary.
Mm-hmm.
So we were at the library a lot. And I remember we'd have a special day for the library. And we wouldn't necessarily go to the library to like do our homework or get work done. It was just like, mm-hmm. Because it was we're already home, let's do something so that y'all don't drive me crazy. My mom would take us to the library. So it'd be more of a fun outing rather than like, the library is always a fun, but it'd be more of a fun outing than a, gotta go there. So
it was like you're going to the park time, basically?
Yeah, pretty much.
Ah, that's really interesting. Definitely different. But, yeah. I gotta ask, because I know you kept leaning towards how much you love horror and all of that. What was like your first introduction to horror? This is the thing that me and Jackie really always love to hear people talk about, because everyone has different stories, whether they were traumatized before firsthand,
yeah, right,
or they
right.
stumbled upon something and were excited. Like,
do you mean horror movies or horror books?
Just horror, honestly, as a genre. Like, what was your first introduction to the genre?
Okay, so technically, my introduction to horror was at the library, and I got the book In a Dark, Dark Room by Alvin Schwartz, or I guess Retold mm-hmm. by Alvin Schwartz. And I don't know if either one of you have read that book. It's for children.
I haven't.
But it has the story, The Green Ribbon.
Oh my god, yes. And it's, yes, I know that story.
Yeah, the story. Yeah, I remember reading that. I thought I was the only kid in the world who read that story. I'm surprised that millennials later, other millennials were reading it, and then it made her resurgence on BuzzFeed, and everyone was like, do you remember that creepy story, The Green Ribbon? And I was like, oh my god, I'm not the only one. It was traumatized by the story.
Is that the one with the girl whose head goes rolling or something?
Yeah, she's got the ribbon
yeah,
around
I keep
her
hearing
neck.
About it.
I specifically remember reading that book in my dad's study, and it was the middle of the night, and I was supposed to be asleep anyway. I don't know why I was in my dad's study. But we technically weren't allowed to scary books, so I had somehow gotten this book past my mom, and so I remember reading that story for the first time, and it's about this young girl who's got the ribbon around her neck, and the boy who likes her is just like, when are you gonna take that stupid ribbon off? And she's like, I'll tell you when we get married, I'll tell you when we're old, and she never tells him until she's on her deathbed, and then she's like, I'll finally tell you, and then he takes the ribbon off and her head falls off. And I remember, for some reason, I guess because the illustrations were creepy, that stuck with me. And I guess a lot of the millennials, it stuck with me forever. And it added to the experience by reading it in the middle of the night. I don't know. But that was my first introduction to, it's not like high-class literary horror, but, it counts.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, though.
Yeah.
It's definitely horror. When did that book even come out? Because I didn't hear about it, honestly, until BuzzFeed and all of that
stuff. Yeah, it came out in, the late 70s, early 80s. So, I think 81, maybe? So it's old. Mm-hmm. Which is why the illustrations were probably so.
I think it was also changed a couple times, too, because I know there was one where, I remember it differently, too, because I think there was one that, he kept trying to take the ribbon off. And she was like, no, I'm going to warn you, don't do this before I have to tell you, but don't touch it. And then when he takes it without her permission, he's like, I told you not to touch my ribbon. And her head is falling and rolling. That's the version I remember because there was like different iterations.
Oh, man. That's like a totally different. Yeah, no, my version, she was just like, she just kept putting off telling him. And he, like, he had to wait until her deathbed when she was like an old, not old lady, but like, she was dying before the ribbon came off. And so I didn't know there was like another version.
Yeah.
Maybe I need
I think the version that Jackie mentioned is the version I heard of. I didn't even know there were multiple versions.
Yeah. Holy moly. I gotta, I should find that version. Yeah. The other one is, it's either way, her head came off and it stuck with me. And I heard being like, oh my God. I don't think any other story in that collection stuck with me. There was one story about a pirate that I guess was kind of creepy, but the green ribbon is apparently the one that stuck with a lot of millennials to this day. As far as movies go, though, I'm pretty sure, because as far as horror in my family's house, my parents weren't big on horror, and they also weren't very big on Halloween for just like a lot of like parental / religious reasons. So yeah. any early introduction to horror that I had was secretly. So
same.
The first, I don't know, we couldn't watch Scooby-Doo. We couldn't watch,
oh man,
I know, I watched it anyway, but like it just, we couldn't watch it. We couldn't watch Are You Afraid of the Dark, but I watched it anyway, and I freaking loved Are You Afraid of the Dark.
Same
yeah. And then for horror movies, I think, not counting any, well, they should, I was allowed to watch old movies because I love classic cinema. I love movies from the 30s, the 40s.
Same.
The 50s. Yes. And so I'm pretty sure, what was the first? I think House on Haunted Hill was my first introduction to like movie horror.
Oh, the Vincent Price one?
With Vincent Price, yeah. And I loved that movie. And then I guess later on, I Know What You Did Last Summer, the 90s. That was the first horror movie
but
I
watched that I was for, huh? Over. I'm right and here.
I'm right here. What are you waiting for? Yeah, that was the first time we watched it at a sleepover. And I was like, yes, parents aren't here. Finally going to get to watch this movie. And I watched it and I loved it. And I remember my friend's mom was watching it with us. She was the only one who screamed throughout the whole movie. She just was not feeling this movie, but it was a fun experience. I loved it. So those are my,
that's hilarious,
that I can remember. Those are my,
that's pretty cool.
I love the range in that. You went from like high Vincent Price to fucking, yeah, I Know What You Did Last Summer.
I Know What You Did. Yeah,
that sounds like some shit Jackie would do. Like, how?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, we covered the House on Haunted Hill episode. We covered that, and I know Kendall and I were just laughing. Freaking that couple. That couple was so stressful. Vincent Price and his wife. And I'm just like, oh my God. Like, why are you bringing us into your drama? This is your drama. Deal with your little couple's therapy.
At the same time, I love live for that drama.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of, and that's probably why I'm such a, I love this. They were a mess.
They were a mess, though.
Oh.
Oh
my God!
Yeah, they were the worst. But I will say, like, the best part about that is that they like both kind of hated each other. It wasn't just a one sided hate, so it made it funny.
Yeah.
It's never funny when it's a one sided hate. It's just like that person got problems. But when it's both of them, you're like, this is comedy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's too funny. All right, the big question I want to ask you is, how did Wandering Reader come to life?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so when I had first started this Instagram account, because I had a personal Instagram account that I still have, but this one became my YouTube. I was teaching English in Japan.
Mm.
And so I thought, and at the time I thought I was going to be staying in Japan forever, or at least Asia. I had previously taught in South Korea, and I really love and still love Asia. And so I started this account thinking, well, I will teach English and live all over Asia, and I thought I was literally going to be wandering. I thought I was going to be moving from place to place and, you know, giving book recommendations and reading. And it wasn't, it didn't start out as like a horror account, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so I thought I was going to keep doing the ESL traveling broad bank while still reading. And so I made it the one year. And I haven't changed, I feel like part of me is like I should change it, but I've had it for so long that I'm afraid that people will find like my account if I change my name. Mm-hmm. And so
yeah,
it's been that way. I think I've had this like Bookstagram account for like 6, going on 7 years now.
Mm-hmm.
I started it. Yeah, I started it back in 2016, 2017. So, but yeah, I thought I was going to be traveling and same time, and that did not happen, but still have that Instagram handle. So,
well, I mean, when yeah, you're reading books, you kind of are traveling. See what I did there?
True. So true. That's, oh,
that's
so
that
true.
Marketing mind talking right there.
Yeah. 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 And so I just left it alone. But maybe if I know I can change it without like followers getting confused, I might, but I don't know, the name kind of reminds me of when I started it in Japan, so I'm kind of like hesitant to change it because I have a little nostalgic connection to coming up with the name in the first place,
mm-hmm,
I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Honestly, I don't think you have to change it. It still fits, like even though it probably doesn't fit the definition that you originally intended.
Yeah.
Wandering is definitely something that is not foreign to horror, so it fits.
Nope. Yeah, I feel like if I were to change it, because I think in like my subtitle, I put spooky librarian. And so some people have been referring to me as the spooky librarian, which I am. So it counts. But I don't know if I would change the whole Instagram name to that.
So you like also that librarian when you're at work and someone's like, what should I read? You just like slide to the book.
Yep. Yeah. So
you're like, read this horror book in particular.
Yes. I work in the like readers advisory department. So.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a reader's services assistant. So I sit at a desk and someone comes to the desk and it says something like, you know, I read this book and I really loved it and I want to find something similar. Do you have any recommendations? And it's not always like a horror / thriller, you know, recommendation, mm-hmm, that people are looking for. But when it is, there's like a connection. It's like, oh, have I got a book for you? And it's great. But sometimes someone comes up and they're just like, I love romance and I need a good romance recommendation. I need a light read. And I'm just like, oh, God, this will be a challenge. Because I, you know, I don't read a lot of romance. So that's when the challenging part of the job comes in. And I got to like, gotta do extra work. There's a way we can recommend books without having like read them. But
yeah,
it's still a little challenging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bet. But it's still pretty cool though. I mean, yeah, I could believe that. Like, you always see that in like either cartoons or movies. There's always that one librarian who's like so far away from when they're talking, but then all of a sudden they'd be like, hey, what are you talking about? And then you're just like, wait, where'd you come from?
Like they're a drug dealer. So I got this knowledge, man.
Yep. I also wear a little pin on my, I've got like a lanyard that I wear and I have a pin that says, I read horror. So people know when they come to the desk, just in case, you know, it's just like, this is a safe space. If you are a horror reader, you can come to me. This is not a, because some people, I feel like sometimes horror is so stigmatized because it's the yucky genre. It's the bloody genre. Mm-hmm. It's the trashy genre. And so sometimes people are just like, you know, I want to be horror, but they don't want to admit what kind of horror they like. They don't want to admit that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe like me, they're a little bit of a psychopath, and they just want a lot of blood, you know?
Like the gory stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, I love the gory stuff. I love the gory stuff. And it's no different from when someone comes up to the desk and is looking for, like, a really good, steamy, smutty romance. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes people, I feel like some patrons, they're just like, can I ask a person, you know, if they have a recommendation for this, or will they judge me? What I'm reading, and we don't really, not really, but yeah, I want people to know that as a librarian, if you like lots of blood, you can come to me. Let me help you. you find what you're looking for. So yeah.
All right, I'm gonna say this one. I'm gonna say this one real quick. We're keeping Nina in our zombie apocalypse group because she's gonna have all the knowledge we need in how to survive. She's a librarian and she read horror for a living, so she'll know.
You're right, yes. She'll read the manuals, right? When you open
I'll read the manuals. See, and that's so funny because I will genuinely read the manuals.
Are you one of people who read the terms and agreements of like? Yes.
Yeah, because what's so funny specifically about this, like the zombie genre, is that it's the genre I am most terrified of. Like, it is the genre in movies and in fiction that will keep me up at night. And so I think because of that, at least reading about it makes me feel like in some weird way I'm preparing for a zombie apocalypse that, won't really happen, but you never know. And my husband loves zombies and I love talking about like doomsday scenarios with him that, I don't know, wouldn't necessarily involve zombies, but it's kind of cool to talk about. But I don't know if I would survive, mm-hmm. but I would definitely have the knowledge. I feel like I'd be the one that had the knowledge, but then died, and everyone's like, well, damn it. She read all the books. Now what do we do? And now you're like, you know what I mean?
You know what, you're right. The smart character always do get got.
So. It's true, yes. Yeah. And then the group is just like...
And it's usually because of a dumb character.
Yeah, the group is always just like, oh, she knew it all. We didn't listen. Why? Yeah.
He didn't listen. I'll be the person that's like, you know how the movies go. You read that book. We shouldn't do this. And no one will listen to me. And then I will probably die for some stupid... I don't know.
That is definitely how it goes.
I'm definitely not the one that runs fast. So.
Oh, me either. You're good. Yeah. I already told Kendall that I'm gonna throw myself into the herd if it ever happens. I'm gonna just leave me be.
Oh my God.
I embrace this. I embrace it.
No, I genuinely like. I don't hope for any zombie apocalypse, but if I had to choose between the kind of zombies that I would die by, I would actually prefer I would prefer to die by like Train to Busan zombies versus Walking Dead zombies. I feel like my death would be quicker in the Train to Busan.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. they, you know, you get attacked, but you turn so quick that it's like practically over. Whereas I feel like with the Walking Dead, your death is going to be a slow, awful. Like I can't. I do not want that.
Yeah, you're right. Neither way is good because they both work. Like I feel like either they're really fast and their hearing isn't as great, or they're really slow and their hearing is fantastic.
Yes.
I feel like that's pretty much how they go about it. Yep. You could be moving like a damn slug, but the moment they hear you, 10,000 of them start slowly creeping towards you.
My
and you're
God.
Like, oh God, time to go.
No, oh my God.
Yeah, I understand. I completely understand the thinking of just jumping into the herd because it's like, yo, this is it. Like. We've seen, even before COVID, like, we were always like, viruses and diseases are like the one thing that take out civilizations. Mm-hmm. But like now having experienced COVID, we all experienced like what COVID done to the world and seen done to people. We go, man, a virus like this would just wreck the world. We're going to go in the lab and just fix this. Like, it's over.
Yeah, right.
It's done.
And
guys.
That's probably like, that's one of the reasons why that genre is so terrifying to me, because like, not because of the zombies themselves, but because they're kind of they're like a warning. They're like, hey, this is what happens when your government fails you. This is what happens when you can't count on your neighbors. Mm-hmm. This is what happens when people turn on themselves. Because it really is the people in that scenario. This is what happens when you run out of food, when you run out of resources. Marginalized people might be in bigger danger than people who are, you know, privileged. And so it's absolutely terrifying. And it keeps me up at night.
No, I totally get that, because it also feels like it's also a part of nature. Like, it feels like it's bound to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh yeah.
Like, viruses and things like that are just bound to happen. It's not just I know people have theories about people going in the lab and making stuff, and I'm sure there's some truth to that, but a lot of this stuff is just, you know, people existing, right? Like, we interact with life as life goes on. We interact with trees. We interact with different animals as we domesticate animals, stuff like that. New viruses and different chemistry and biology just kind of evolves, and... Who knows if, I don't know, somebody becomes fucking friends with Caesar from Planet of the Apes and then now he gets on. I don't know.
Right,
that's how this shit works.
Oh, what? God. Yeah.
I'm just saying, that's how it works. Like, that's how diseases and stuff like that come about. It's like different species interacting and then things start just meshing and start mixing and acting in weird ways. You're like, well, people never used to really deal with monkeys. Now people kind of do.
Yeah, they do.
Some cross-species virus thing comes about. Like, that's biology. That's like chemistry. That's how all that stuff shit comes together. It's really weird. It feels unnatural, but it's actually a part of nature.
Science! Yay!
Yes, yeah. I know, right? Science. Scary.
Science is scary, man.
I find that, yeah, I agree. I find that far more terrifying than, like, even vampires or anything like that. At least with vampires. Maybe you run into a lucky one and you're like, yo, just turn me. Like, you ain't got to kill
me. Right? Right? I will just join the gang. Just fight.
Yeah, I'm down. Okay. Like, I'll get the Lost Boys here. I'm in there. Let's do this.
Yes.
I know, right? And I'd be like, I already hate sunlight. It already drains me and kills me. So, hey,
I know. I'm
closer to that to be the vampire.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is crazy. But I also wanted to ask you another thing. You mentioned, like, you know, one of your favorite authors, but what would be, like, your top five favorite authors?
Oh, that's so hard. That's so hard because that's hard. Okay, so you said top three, top five?
Five.
Five, okay. So Stephen King, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Tananarive Due. I don't know if either one of you have read anything by Tananarive Due, but
I haven't.
No.
Okay, she's a literary heroine of mine. Tananarive Due was someone I needed as a Black woman loved horror. She is a Black horror and fantasy writer, and she has written a lot of really good books. And she's been praised by both Stephen King and Jordan Peele. And I highly recommend read any of her books, specifically like The Good House, if you like haunted houses. Let me think, what else? She's got a short story collection called Ghost Summer, which is a mixture of like horror, fantasy, and science fiction, and all the stories are good.
Mm-hmm.
What else? I'm like going blank. You know when you're supposed to like list a bunch of stuff and wiped? What else? Anyway, read Tananarive Due. There's an author named Darcy Coates, and I love reading her books when I'm in like a cozy haunted house kind of mood. Like she writes like haunted house stories, but they kind of have like happy endings, so they're not super dark, but some of them are really creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And so her books are to me what like cozy mysteries are for some other people. So I love Darcy Coates. I don't know if I would count her as my top three, but I have so many of her books that I might as well like put her in there. See, what's interesting, I like Adam Neville. I don't know if you've ever read anything by him, and I hope I'm saying his last name right. I've always pronounced it as Neville. He's a British horror author, and he wrote The Ritual, which I don't know if you've seen the movie, but The Ritual is really good.
I've been meaning to, but I never watched it.
Hold on. Actually, there's a lot by that title. There's an Asian film by that title, and I think there's an American film by that title, right?
There's so the Ritual I'm referring to, I think you can watch it on Netflix, and it's about like these four or five dudes that are going for a hike in the woods, and then they get lost.
They get lost, right?
Yeah.
Some like psychedelic experience almost.
Yeah, and they come across.
Yeah, I did see that one. That one was awesome.
Yeah, it was
originally based off a book?
Yep. I'm telling you. I was like, wow. I'm telling you, it was probably a book first. Yeah, he wrote that. It's very good. He writes a lot of really good folk horror. A lot of his horror has cults in them, which I also like.
Who doesn't love a good cult?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I am a cult fan. But I think there's another movie coming out on Netflix called No One Gets Out Alive, and that's another book that he wrote. I think that's going to be on Netflix, but Adam Neville just basically is in that top five. I've been binge reading his books. And then, what else? This is so hard. Because usually, if I had to pick a top three or a top two, it's usually just Stephen King to not do. It's like, usually that's all I need.
I ask the tough questions.
Yeah, I want to say, because he doesn't, maybe Shirley Jackson. Probably Shirley.
Of course.
Because I read the lottery.
Yeah, yeah.
The lottery was awesome. That was the first thing I ever read from her.
Mm-hmm. Shirley Jackson has inspired so many horror writers that I feel like it would be silly to not include her in my top five. Because without her, we wouldn't have things like The Shining or...
That's a good point. I never
even considered that. I love Shirley Jackson. And it's funny because for some people, Shirley Jackson is hit or miss. Some people, I feel like if they read her stuff, they're just like, I don't get it. And that's fine. It's a lot of her books are, the scares are very subtle, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not like there's blood going everywhere in Shirley Jackson's books, you know? A lot of it's very subtle, and it's very...
It's mostly psychological, too, with her.
Yes. That's
the Lottery was definitely psychological.
Yes. Yeah, and so I think my favorite, aside from, I don't know, what I liked about the Haunting of Hill House Netflix series, which is, like, my favorite thing in the whole wide world, is that it paid, like, an homage to the book, even though the plot is not the same as the book. And so I would have people come into the bookstore, especially around spooky season, and they'd be like, yeah, do you have, mm-hmm. you know, The Haunting of Hill House? And I'd be like, we sure do. And I'd get the book, and it has, like, the Netflix series cover, which is very misleading. And then they read the book, and they're like, that was nothing but the Netflix show. I'm just like, I know. it's a very different plot, where if you have read the book, the TV show has lots of fun little Easter eggs for Shirley Jackson fans, but it's not the same story. And so I love that. But some people, I think, read Shirley Jackson and realize that her stuff is not as, what's the word I'm looking for? Not as overly dramatic, mm-hmm. As like television makes it out to be. Mm-hmm. It's a lot quieter, but still very unsettling.
Yeah, because that particular book has been adapted 3 times. Like, the original, I think, 60s black and white film, and then the 90s version, which I saw in theaters when I was a kid, and then now the Netflix version. And it's funny because a lot of people have praised the Netflix version more than the other adaptions by saying, hey, like, even though it's kind of different, it's kind of more faithful to what she was writing.
Yes.
And that's the one thing I read from people reviews about it, and it's so beautiful. Like, it's just so, I mean, it scared the hell out of me a lot of times, because especially, you know, with freaking the sleep paralysis part, because I suffer from that. But the way it is, the way it was written, was just like, it was just so beautiful and just like dramatic, romantic in a way. Like, you know, death was just beautiful too, and I'm just like, oh my god.
Yes. No, I love it. It's one of my favorite, I'm not even sure I can call it an adaptation. It's one of my favorite, like, homages to The Haunting of Hill House. Mm-hmm. Hands down, for sure. Because you're right, it portrays a lot of emotion very well. I love how it handles grief. I do love how it handles love. I love how it handles family. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that isn't always in, that's not necessarily in Shirley Jackson's book. But the themes that they pull out of Shirley Jackson's book, I'm just like, chef's kiss. This is perfection. I'm not even mad that it's not the same, like, story. I love how some of the characters in the series are named after some of the characters in the book. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I think one is... Let's see. Oh, like how, you know, like Shirley's character is literally named Shirley. Mm-hmm. Jackson. Little things like that. So, yeah. So I guess this was a very long way of answering your question.
No, it's cool. It's super informative. You just reminded me, like, Jackie has a bunch of times I need to finish the Netflix series, because I didn't. I actually literally started the one that came after. What was the
Bly Manor?
Bly Manor.
Yeah, which is also based,
I started that also
based
one.
On a short story, Bly Manor.
Yes.
Bly Manor,
I
think
I also really like Bly Manor, and it's closer to an adaptation than, like, Hill House was, mm-hmm. because The Turn of the Screw mm-hmm. is also very good, but I think what's funny is that when people have, like, Netflix series that adapt classic literature, not everybody has the patience for classic literature, and so they'll read the book and they'll be like, this is boring. This is nothing like the Netflix series, which, you know, is fair. But, The Turn of the Screw is also very good.
I didn't think it was boring. I didn't finish it. I actually need to go back and finish it. I think I got like 3 or 4 episodes in it, and I paused and was like, hold on. Wasn't there another one before this? And I remember Dale House, and I was like, am I watching this out of order? I hope I'm not watching this out of order, so I just stopped altogether.
Yeah, no, I highly recommend. I mean, and they're not connected. They just use the same actors. But I highly recommend you like rewatch and finish Hill House and also Bly Manor.
Yeah, I mean.
Only because Mike Flanagan is a director. I love anything Mike Flanagan.
Yeah, he's amazing. It's really like, good. He is just so, like, yeah. Like, after, like, it took, I had to rewatch, like, Hill House, because, again, like, it freaked me out so bad that I had to stop watching it, and then I went back to it, and I watched it, I cried, like, crazy at the season finale, and I was like, yes. So sad and beautiful. But then Bly Manor, oh my god, Bly Manor hit me in so many ways that I was just like, I did not need to be attacked like this. I did not need this, but I know. Thank you. Okay, because yeah. Oh, that was just a beautiful, beautiful take on it. So gorgeous, and again, the whole emphasis about the beauty of death and love and grief. Yes. Is just like, I mean, there's a quote from Bly Manor that I said, I want this engraved on my urn when I die, when I turn to ashes. Put it, engrave it on my urn, so people can remember. Because this is so beautiful.
Yes, no, I 100% agree. And I what's funny is that I'm just like, we wouldn't have this stuff without the book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point to emphasize.
We would have something similar, but this a lot of the ideas that we get from horror movies originate from the writers and the books that they come from. And that's what I love about it. I also love being that like annoying snob. Like, man, I read the book first, and it's
totally different. Do you find that it, like, enhances the experience for you to read the book prior to watching this series or movie, or do you feel like it kind of makes you just focused on the book more so than the series? Like, how do you experience it?
I'm that person who likes to read the book first before the movie, just because I want to see, because it is someone's creation, and I want to see how it was originally, you know, put to paper before someone changes it and adapts it and, you know, tweaks it for different audiences. I want to see, you know, anything Stephen King writes or Shirley Jackson, I want to see the creation, how they wanted it to be seen before it goes into the hands of, you know, someone else and makes changes. Because, I don't know, I feel like sometimes something is lost when it's adapted to film. Sometimes, not always. Sometimes,
yeah, definitely. Sometimes
film adaptations make it amazing and they bring the book to life, but sometimes it's trash, and then you're just kind of like, "Oh, yeah." For example, I read The Shining before I watched the movie, and so, and I don't know if either one of you have read the book or if you are your or just.
I haven't read the book. I've been meaning to.
But we've heard, okay. The people's reviews about how it was vastly different.
It is, yeah, and there are some things in the movie that I really loved, like the soundtrack and the cinematography, and Jack Torrance looks way more like an asshole than he is in the book. he's a realer person, more real. Realer? I can't talk. He's a more real person in the book, you know, than he is on the screen. All the characters in the book they have more depth. And I think some of that was condensed in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Wendy's is a stronger character in the book than she is in the movie. Danny is a stronger character in the book than he is in the movie. And Dick Halloran, who they kill off in the movie, that is not the case in the book.
He's one of
my favorite characters in the book. And so, you know, I was obviously upset when they just killed him for no freaking reason in the movie. And so it's things like that where it's just like, wow, you really just spit on this, didn't you? You just, you're like, that was great. But, you know, and well, I mean, that's a bit extreme. But sometimes, this is why I, you know, the book first.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see what the author was trying to do. It's the same. There are times where it's done well, like when they adapted It. It is one of my favorite. It is my favorite Stephen King book of all the Stephen King books. It is the only horror novel that had me in tears by the end, and I love what is it, 2018/2020
Yeah, 2018.
Adaptations. Yeah, I love the adaptation movie adaptations.
Same.
I love them. And so
the old ones and the newer ones are both good.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. But I love it. I think I love the movies just as much because I read the book. And I feel like the characters in the book, I mean, they, you only have so much time in a movie. And this, the book is so freaking long. But they did, I think they did a really good job for characters that needed a lot of development. They developed them just enough that I wasn't dissatisfied. They weren't able to fit everything in there because you only have so many hours to sit in the theater. But I, you know, I, no matter what, I will read the book first because I want the original art first before I see it changed, if that makes sense.
No, it does. It does. I mean, this example would be the girl with all the gifts. You know, when they changed the character from the book, she's a white girl, and then for the movie is a little black girl.
Yeah, yeah.
And people have said that how, like, they did, like, the film version more than the book. And there are people who read the book who praise the movie for that. And they're like, no, this was, I actually liked the movie more the way they did it. And that's how you know you did a good job, when you adapted something and then you made the fans of the book satisfied at the same time. Yes. Like, that's how you know, like, you did something good.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was me with the Hunger Games, honestly. I know Hunger Games is directly horror. But that was definitely me with the Hunger Games. When the first movie was coming out, I was like, I remember thinking, one of my friends was like, oh, the book is actually pretty good. I was like, oh, really? There's books? He was like, yeah. I remember, I think I had some time when I was in college. I finished the first book right around the time that the first movie came out. And I was like, oh, that was a pretty good adaptation. And then I feel like, at least in my opinion, I feel like with that franchise, as they kept adapting movies, each movie got better. Like, because they were like really, really close to the book. Like, there were certain details they left out, but like for the most part, I feel like that franchise as a whole was like a great adaptation of the book series.
They were really close. Yeah, and that's that is one of the books where I had one of my best friends in college was also reading that series at the same time, and she was not a huge book fan, but the Hunger Games series was a series where she was like, this is so good, to the point where I'm like, well, if my best friend is reading it and she doesn't even pick up a book, then I need to check this out. And truthfully, though, also, I need to clarify, I have more than one best friend, and I don't want the best friend who's going to listen to this podcast to think of it. Because she does. Anyway, we might cut some of that out. Anyway, but I remember reading the first book and loving it, and then the first movie came out. But I'm really bad with series. I burn out, and so I made it through, like, the middle of the second book. And then I didn't finish it. And so to this day, I do not know how the Hunger Games series ends. I might, this is one of the first times where I might just watch the movies. I'm too far into horror now to go back to like the Hunger Games. But the first book, I remember being like, this is wild. And that's when, after the Hunger Games, we went into this like weird dystopian renaissance in fiction, where everybody was writing dystopian fiction and young people were fighting for their lives.
Maze Runner and all of
Divergent.
Those.
Yeah.
that was a fun time.
Yep, Divergent and all of that, yeah. Definitely different. And yeah, I'm sure that's coming back around in some capacity.
Because we are living the Hunger
Games. Yeah, probably. Yes. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I wish Squid Game had been a book, but I don't need it to. It's
which one?
Squid Game.
Squid Games?
Squid Game, yeah.
Yeah. Squid Game is, to me, I think it's perfect on its own, so I don't need a book.
But yeah, I wouldn't want it to be a book, because I'm just like, I already cry with the series, but I really want to cry on these pages and damage them. Like, nah.
Oh my god. So good.
But, yes.
Yeah, for sure. But let's get ready to get out of here soon. Got it, Jack.
Yes. So, before we head out, I do want to ask you, like, is there any books that you recommend to our listeners to read?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what's weird about horror, as far as recommending, is everybody's got triggers, everybody's got lines that are drawn, it's got their, like, specific genre, so if I were to recommend any books, I'm hoping that I don't, like, let me think, recommend something too slow. It's horror. Reading horror can be a lot. There was a book I recently finished called Suffer the Children, by Craig DeLuey. Mm-hmm. think I said his last name right, D-I-L-O-U-I-E. And it is about, it's set like right before Christmas. All the children of the world just drop dead.
Jesus.
So we're starting off bleak. Yeah, I know. And so the world's freaking out. They don't know what's going on. Is it a virus? Is it something in the atmosphere? And it's happening all over the world. And the world is mourning. And then, randomly, the children come back to life. And everyone is very confused. And so they're just like, well, yay, our children are back. But now, they have a thirst for blood. And so parents are trying to figure out how to keep their children alive. Because blood is the only thing that will keep them alive. And so it literally brings new meaning to the phrase, your children will bleed you dry. Because parents are having to literally give their own blood for their children to drink. And so it's kind of like a twist on this, on a vampire trope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's very dark, but it's very good. And it's one of the best books I've read this year. Yeah, it's really good. And then if I were to recommend, I don't know, another, I recently read The House Next Door by Anne Rivers Siddons. And this is another mm-hmm. book inspired from Shirley Jackson's The Haunting of Hill House. And it's more of a subtle scare, but basically this new house is built in this prominent neighborhood. This is 1970s, and all the neighbors are just like, well, it's cool that we've got a new house in the neighborhood. But everyone that moves in, you know, something terrible happens to them. And so now the neighbors are like, we got to get this house. We got to get this house out of this neighborhood. It's bad. And it's causing drama and toxicity amongst, you know, the community. And so it's from, the story is told from the perspective of the next door neighbors. And it's really, really good. I sped through it in like a day. And it's a book that Stephen King also really loved for the comparison of a house being evil and no one understanding why. And so it's so good. And I guess those would be the two books that I would highly recommend.
Okay.
Solid. I'm going to definitely check out both of them.
Sounds dope.
And we can add show notes so people can find links to them.
Oh, perfect.
Yes. So thank you, Nina. Would you like to tell our audience where they can find you?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me on Instagram at The Wandering Reader. And it's all lowercase, the_wandering_reader. And I'm also on Twitter, but I don't think, let me see, pretty sure, yeah, I'm at Twitter, Nina Bobina. I need to change it, but it's, and I'll probably have to link it because the spelling of it is stupid. So find me on Instagram, find me on Twitter, and that's just about it. If you happen to be in the Lawrence/Kansas area, you could always stop by Lawrence Public Library or Raven Bookstore. Need a book recommendation in person and happen to be listening to this podcast, stop by because I've got plenty of board recommendations for y'all.
Awesome. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay. So until then,
anytime.
See you guys around.